Here we go. Shall I bring to the birth and not herald the pedigree, says Jehovah? Am I delivering a son, or am I withholding something God has told? This is Isaiah chapter 66, verse 9. Little children, our daily scripture for today, from the version of Yours Truly from 2003. And there are many different versions of this scripture. This scripture is translated differently in different places. But I want to look at the New World Translation from 1984, because the later translation from 2013 of the Watchtower Society almost just becomes the same as the King James Version. So go back to the 1984 version and you see it's translated as follows. It says, as for me, shall I cause the breaking through and not cause the giving birth, says Jehovah, or am I causing a giving birth, and do I actually cause a shutting up, your God has said. So it's totally different in the way that you can interpret that. Doesn't give the sense of the shutting up happening after the birth, necessarily. And it doesn't give the sense of the breaking through. As being, you know, the completion of the birth. So it's got some different ideas there. Whereas the rendition of Yours Truly is, shall I bring to the birth and not herald the pedigree, says Jehovah? Am I delivering a son, or am I withholding something? Different. Completely different. And, you know, time will tell, but other counselors may weigh in on that as to whether that's a reasonable or a beneficial, is the point. Whether that's an insightful translation and thereby benefits. So, today's study in the Ark of Urartu of the Orient Express, Little Children, the flag of the People's Republic of China, is the illustration there at the beginning of chapter 7, paragraph 4, our daily reading from the article, The Ark of Urartu. The flag of China is this red background with five stars, one of them larger than the other four, and situated in the upper left corner of the red background is the larger star with the four smaller ones fanning out to the right. I wrote 2011-03-11 space 0931 hours, quoting from the 2005 movie Nanny McPhee. That was a movie, Nanny McPhee. I remember writing this. I don't remember the movie's name being Nanny McPhee or anything like that. But there was a character called Nanny McPhee in a movie, and I do remember that. So I trust this is correct. When you need me but do not want me, this is what Nanny McPhee said, when you need me but do not want me, then I must stay. When you want me but no longer need me, then I have to go. End quote. If Jehovah is willing, we have some old Sumerian proverbs, and this is the quotation of those proverbs. There are seven of them. Number one, and listen to this, little children, whoever has walked with truth generates life. Number two, do not cut off the neck of that which has had its neck cut off. Number three, that which is given in submission becomes a medium of defiance. number four, the destruction is from his own personal God. He knows no savior. Number five, wealth is hard to come by, but poverty is always at hand. Number six, he acquires many things. He must keep close watch over them. Number seven, a boat bent on honest pursuits sailed downstream with the wind. Utu has sought out honest ports for it. End quote. And that concludes our paragraph and our study for today. In the article, The Ark of Urartu, Orient Express, very brief study, and I must say, despite its being brief, I think that today's study has been perhaps one of the most beneficial or rich, the richest, one of the richest in wisdom and insight, the insight that it does give, being from these proverbs and from the saying from the movie. But I think there's a lot of insight in those. I think maybe even, well, there's a lot of insight in the Nanny McPhee quote. A ton, just a ton of insight. But in the old Sumerian proverbs, don't you think those are interesting, but insightful, very insightful? Like, if you look at this, see, not everybody knows that wealth is hard to come by. Now, I didn't know that. Even today when I read it, I thought to myself, you know, I didn't know that. Wealth is hard to come by because we don't think of it that way. We at least I don't. I never did. I always thought of it, well, you know, I always thought of it as, well, you know, I need to make some wealth or get some wealth, have some wealth. Wealth is something I need. And I never thought of it as being hard to come by, except, of course, if you're trying to get wealth by working a 9-to-5 job, that is going to be hard to come by because you're going to spend your money very likely before you can save any amount of it, and you're not going to make wealth by doing that in most jobs. So wealth is hard to come by. I knew that. But I mean, in the sense of, it's true even when you have wealth. That's the thing about this saying. Wealth is hard to come by even if you have wealth. Now, as you get older and you have an old age pension, you might get a little richer when you have an old age pension. If you've got a place to live, you know, rent free, like you own your own building or something, you can live there. So you don't have to pay rent, then you get your old age pension or whatever income you've got, you might be able to get by in your old age, let's say. Oh yeah, I want to talk about this though. You see, there shouldn't be this idea of old age and people getting old. We have to do away with the idea because it's causing, are going to cause problems, because people say, well, because they're going to die, they think, well, they've got to do things like, I got to live it up because I'm going to die. You know, life is short. You got to enjoy it while you can. So people pursue all these things like alcohol and, you know, people, like, they don't realize the poison that is in these things, that the poison that is going to kill them is the very thing that they're doing there, because they're not only taking the poison if they drink wine or something, or anything really, but anything that's going to change the way they feel, either alter their mood, right? If they do anything like that, like drink wine, they don't realize that's not only going to damage their brain and therefore their body. It's also going to, or thereafter, it will damage their body if it damages their brain, but it's also beyond the damage to their body. It's going to waste some of the crucial time that they need to get the information they need to live healthier. And if they live healthier, there's no reason why anybody should die if they can figure out how to get one more day. If you spend each day figuring out how to get one more day added onto your life, then you theoretically should never die, because if in one day I can discover the knowledge to increase my lifespan by one day, I'm never going to get older. That's the idea. So I don't think that we understand old age properly, but so wealth has nothing to do with old age. So I just got into that because people think about wealth differently as they get quote-unquote older, right? That's why I mentioned that. But wealth is hard to come by at any age, is what that's saying. It's a remarkable thing to see that, because the ancient Sumerians, way back as far as the Sumerians, that's the most ancient civilization, I believe, on the planet, isn't it? You know, I mean, apart from Noah and his three sons, that small group of that civilization. But the Sumerians, I mean, all of humanity was born out of Noah. The Sumerians were born from Noah's family. But Noah's family and his small group were not really a large nation in the place where they lived at the Ark site. We don't think of that as being the oldest nation on Earth. But it is, of course. Noah's family is the oldest nation on Earth, because his family is the whole population of the Earth now. But the Sumerians were the oldest civilization that has a name like the name Sumerian. And they knew about wealth being hard to come by. It's incredible. And the idea that poverty is always at hand, that's a brilliant... I mean, this is just one of the proverbs I'm dissecting here, but this proverb and this poverty being always at hand is remarkable. Because it's just... Even if you're really rich, poverty is always at hand. Remember that. Like that's so good. That's so good. It's so powerful. We acquire, or he acquires many things, or we, but he must keep close watch over them. Yeah, right. So it's okay to acquire things, but you know what? You must keep close watch over them. That's sort of one of the drawbacks of acquiring many things. It's going to require a lot of attention. And that's what that explains. It explains what materialism causes, and how to deal with materialism is to pay attention. It's insanely wise. Just beyond wisdom that we have today, I think. It's so simple. And I love number two. Do not cut off the neck of that which has had its neck cut off. Is that brilliant? Is that phenomenal or what? I mean, it's so beautiful and obvious, but it's still, that's why it's so good. They knew it was obvious when they wrote that. So that's the thing. Yeah, there were very wise people living long before the deluge and the Sumerian people. And by means of Noah and his wife, those prior generations were in part preserved and regenerated after the deluge through the three sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and that's what we've been reading about the Ark of Urartu, the Orient Express, and how those sons in part arrived in China. So that's it for our study. We've done like 10, 14, okay, 15 minutes now. I want to show you my two watches. This is fun. I've got Hammy the Crow out yesterday too, and I was wearing her. This is Rolly. I've got Rolly running again. I don't know how long she's going to run, but I didn't do anything much to her. I just took her out and shook her, opened her up and shook her upside down to see if anything would drop out, like maybe there's some dust or something caught inside that was stopping her. But I also decided to not screw the crown all the way in, because I thought, I realized that probably screwing the crown in puts some kind of stress on the mechanism, on the case of the watch or something. And any kind of stress could probably cause something to be aligned a little differently inside, and therefore could stop the watch, or, you know, cause it to stop ticking, or stop the hand from moving. Even if the balance wheel is moving, that's no guarantee. And the balance wheel movement could be very healthy, very large amplitude, like 260 degrees is usually a pretty good amplitude. Yesterday I was maintaining it. So, but even if that balance wheel is working, that doesn't mean the hands will turn. They're separate issues. The hands of the watch don't necessarily turn just because the balance wheel is functioning. But one of my watches yesterday, I guess it was Annie, that was stopped. Yeah, in the end, I've got Annie now. I noticed this morning, for some reason, she was actually exactly, I think her timing was exactly right according to the computer, but she was way off yesterday at some point. So many seconds away from being accurate yesterday or being on time. Today she's in the winder. She's in the winder, which goes round and round and backwards and forwards, because it's, some watches need to be rotated the opposite way. But Annie today was reading perfect time, which is impossible, stupid. It's so impossible. And there's Sissy and there's Rolly. So let's see if we can get them. Yeah, Sissy and Rolly, right? They're like, they're sisters, right? One is the, Rolly is the more accurate. What have I got? Why is it? Yeah, I got to get them. It's hard to get my wrists aligned. Yeah, Rolly is the more accurate homage watch because the size is more accurate. You know, Sissy is. Okay, can I do it the other way? I don't know. Yeah, Sissy is a much larger, you know, a larger sized imitation or copy of the same day-date idea, where the day of the week is located, you know, at the very top, which is here shown at the bottom. The very top of the watch has the full day written out and changing every day. That's the idea of the Rolex day date 40, which is 40 millimeters for the size of the dial. And this Pagani is Rolly, I call her. It's a Pagani watch that's using the Seagull ST16 movement. It's a Chinese movement. Seagull makes, they're known for making very good mechanisms, but it's not well recognized necessarily in our part of the world. Now, the case in which the mechanism is put and the way it's packaged and so on, together with how the hands are, you know, configured, everything about the casing is done by somebody else, right? In this case, Pagani. So that doesn't guarantee that the watch will function just because it's a Seagull movement. But even so, there are some people who found that this particular Pagani watch, its model number PD1752, I think, something like that. 1752 is the right number, I think. And it's the Rolex homage using the ST16, the Seagull movement. And so some people have found that those Paganis don't function. Other people have had good success. The ones who've had bad experiences are in the minority, I think, but it's not 100% good results, or good reports, I should say, with this particular model, but it's such a beautiful, beautiful watch. I was devastated when it stopped moving, stopped working, and the hands just would stop. But the last two times that I set the time on this, the second hand immediately began to tick, and that didn't ever happen before. So it might need a break-in period too, but because that could be what it is too. But the hands that used to be like 2 seconds and then it would start to tick. Or some people would find after you push the crown in, it didn't start to tick until you tapped it hard or shook it. And then the second hand would start to tick. The last two times I set the watch on this, when I clicked the crown in, the second hand immediately began to tick. So that means the hacking would work. See, you can't hack the time accurately to set the second hand precisely unless it starts ticking immediately when you press the crown in. And what I found before is even when the second hand did start, it only started 2 seconds too late after the crown was pushed in. And you couldn't predict when it would start. So it was, you know, it wasn't guaranteed to be 2 seconds. So you couldn't really set the time on this watch before. I'm not going to ever set the time because I know from experience that that's not a good thing to do with this watch, right? If I can avoid it, I will never set the time. Because, you know, I'd almost be better off to pry the back of the case off and speed up the watch until it catches up. And then when it gets ahead, you know, pry the case off, the back of the case off again and slow the watch down. That's almost better than setting the time on this watch because of the dire consequences of setting the time on this watch. I'm not sure which is preferable. I am considering what I'm going to do in those terms. Now, Sissy is only 1 second behind today after however many days, like 10 or 15 or I don't know how many days it's been. Yesterday she was still 0 seconds off of the computer, which is essentially atomic time. Like it's the computer gives us the atomic time, which is completely phenomenally accurate, that is gotten from the nuclear clocks, atomic clocks around the world, wherever they are located. And it's very accurate. So Sissy has been running impossibly well, like 1 second slow after all this time is ridiculous. But I mean, it's kind of like, that's not really better than a digital watch, I don't think. I mean, a digital watch is like 1 second per month or something, I think. Or better, maybe, but something like that. So, I mean, if I look at my Casio, let's see, 40, 3 seconds ahead of the computer. What Cassie is, but she'll stay that way for like months, you know, or shoot, you know, there won't be any need to ever set that for a very long time, because Cassie is a digital watch but she runs off of a quartz crystal, which I think it's safe to say that all digital watches do that, but it's relatively safe to say, but it's probably not entirely safe to say that. But they generally do run off of quartz crystals, and the quartz crystal vibrates at a certain frequency electrically. That's how it works. It's an electrical vibration that's generated depending on the size of the quartz crystal. So if the size of the quartz crystal is not entirely accurate, which happens on the cheaper ones, then the time won't be, you know, as accurate, and it might run slow or fast, but you can't set it. You can't speed it up or slow it down. It's just because of the inaccuracy in the size of the quartz crystal. Okay, just the variation that they don't measure them all and then sell you an exactly correctly sized crystal unless you pay the money for it. That's what that is. But you can get very accurate quartz crystals because they're just sized correctly. So now, the way that these Rolex homages work may not be the same as the Rolex, because these are using, well, this one's using the Miyota, and so does Annie. She's another homage. that I have that we saw yesterday and so on, the previous days as well. Some of the previous days we were using Annie. But Raleigh uses the Seagull movement, but still has the same day-date Rolex homage idea in the Seagull movement, just like the Miyota movement has that day-date. And how it works is at midnight, well, at about 11 o'clock before midnight, that is, about an hour before midnight, the day of the month starts to roll over. You can see it rolling over in the bubble. Now, the bubble, I want to also point out the difference between Rolex and Sissy, and Annie has no bubble at all, no magnifier. But there's a magnifier lens, or like a bubble, a lens on top of the day of the month, which is at 3 o'clock, on both Sissy and Raleigh. They both have this bubble. But the magnification on Sissy is much less, and therefore the numbers a lot smaller than on Raleigh. And I think Raleigh is closer to what the Rolex gives you, with a very large magnification on the number, which makes it possible to read the day of the month very easily. It's a very beautiful magnification. The drawback of having it at 3 o'clock is that, well, it has to be somewhere on the dial, but where it is at 3 o'clock means that when the time is 15 minutes past the hour, it's very difficult to read the accurate time from the minute hand because it's obscured. And also would be difficult when the hour hand is in there, too. And the thing is about the hour hand. The hour hand on this watch is very, very much longer than on some watches, I think, too. But it's true for both of them. And I thought that the numeral, Roman numeral 6 at the bottom for 6 o'clock, that's shown by the numeral, the Roman numeral, it looks like the eye is misaligned on that. Like it doesn't go vertical. Not at all. But then I look at Sissy. Sissy's got the same misalignment. So I think it's exactly maybe like the Rolex exactly. And they both imitated the Rolex precisely. And that's why they have that strange numeral aligned like that. It's very odd. I can't figure out why that is. Except that the V in the VI, which is 6 in Roman numerals, that V points to the right of center. So, therefore, the I should point to the left of center, I guess, to make it balanced. Maybe that's why it's that way. I can't figure out really why. The second hand is extremely beautiful on both of these watches. It's a beautiful blue color, the second hand, and the hour and minute hands are silver, or like the platinum color, which is the idea of the Rolex is made of platinum. This is just made of, it's a $100 watch. They're both $100 watches, these two watches. Less than 150 Canadian, both of these watches. Remarkable. And, of course, the Chinese mechanism, made in China, that's why it's less expensive. But a Japanese mechanism like the Miyota is made in Japan, and that should be, if it's good, should be worth some money. And aren't Japanese products, don't we know they're well made? In China, that's not always true for everything, but it's getting to be more so all the time. Chinese manufacturing is going to be ultimately the standard for the world, because they're going to be doing more manufacturing than anybody. And their standards are going to be the guide for everybody else to aspire to, if we can even possibly attain it. But because just like with Japan, after World War II, when the things that said made in Japan were basically junk, everybody knew they were junk, and we laughed at things when they were, you know, stamped with the words made in Japan. It was something we kind of mocked in a way until Japan became this world leader in manufacturing, and the cars that are made there are the best and so on. They were better than, or as good as the German cars, in some ways, sometimes better, because of their incredible, but I learned about this too from Tony Robbins and the Personal Power tapes, where he talks about Japan and what happened after World War II and how they got somebody from America who went there and helped them to develop the idea of manufacturing precision using tolerances. You know, things have to be manufactured to a certain tolerance, and they can't deviate from that plus or minus tolerance. Once they got that mastered, Japan became good at it. You know, they made their tolerances smaller than other people's, and that's why their mechanical things that have moving parts are more reliable, because they have this tighter tolerance, and they're better made because of that. So that's an important thing about things made in Japan. Now, once China gets that figured out, you know, the world is going to have to, you know, watch out for that, because that's going to be quite impressive, I think. And we already see there are cars coming from China now. There are new things coming out of China, especially in semiconductors, all the time. A lot of things are being done in China, like with Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, TSMC, you know, which company makes chips for Apple and other manufacturers as well. They're a big manufacturing facility in Taiwan. I remember when I bought my Acer laptop, I called technical support, and somebody in Taiwan answered the phone. I remember that, and because my computer was made in Taiwan. Even back then, China was making, that was in 1990 or something around there, when I had my Acer laptop. That's a whole other story, but ever since I bought a computer after that, ever since that, I bought my new computer as twice as powerful, with twice as much RAM, twice as big of everything, like a hard drive. Well, the hard drive didn't get bigger twice every time because I use external drives, but twice the memory, twice everything. Everything had to double every time, twice the clock speed. Everything was always doubling after that, every time I bought a new computer. And that's hard to do, I think, generally, nowadays, because the power can go up without some of these things doubling. The power can double many times without all of these things doubling. But it's also got to do with how long it takes to do, you know, all the time lost in upgrading and all the, you know, things like that. The time is November 17th, 2024 of the Common Era, the hour, 32 hours, North American Eastern Time. I'm Ward Green. Thank you for listening and watching. And I love you very much. And in my behalf, this is Sissy, and this is Raleigh, saying bye for now. It was the Ark of Urartu, the Orient Express, Chapter 7, Paragraph 4 today. So, thank you so much once again. And that's it for today.